Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Shankleberg, and Tim Rogers is joining me again. We tend to talk about supply chain quite a bit, don't we, Tim?
A lot, yeah, apparently. But, well, you know, I think there's a reason for that, Fred, because more and more of us are relying on supply chains. The world is made up of companies that have an extreme dependence on supply chains. We're not vertically integrated the way we used to be, you know?
Well, yeah, the days of Ford company mining iron ore and having his own forests for supply, it's gone.
Well, you've heard the stories about HP making their own nuts and bolts, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So those days are long gone.
They are. Yeah. And I remember one spot we talking about nuts and bolts. One of the mechanical engineers made a chart that showed all of the different nuts and bolts, screws, basically, that were being used in a printer and where they came from. So it was a map of the world showing the part and where it came from. And that was just the supplier of the screw.
Yeah.
But the metal then comes from yet another raft of different mines. And it might have come from a steel producer that took raw material, converted it to steel rods, which were then converted into screws.
There you go.
Right. And his point was an exercise of, well, how far do the components that go into this printer travel?
Right.
And there's no good place to go if you want to get just screws.
No.
It's not a central place. They're available all over the place. Yet the problem was that we had electronics components, we had gears and springs, we had polymers. There was, at one point, I got a phone call when I was sitting at my desk at HP, and this woman asked me, hello, this is Fred. And she said, Where does HP get the cadmium they use in the printers?
Yeah.
There's cadmium in there?
Yeah. And this is becoming obviously more and more of a problem as we're concerned about, the performance of our suppliers throughout the supply chain, you know, again, from an environmental or sustainability standpoint, as well as from a regulatory standpoint.
Oh, yeah. It's just, it becoming very, very buildable and has been for years. Now, one of the things we talked about over the last couple episodes is when something goes wrong, when there's a failure. And we talked about the basic idea of not grabbing the component and isolating it to whose fault it is and then ship it to them and ask. And it's akin to grabbing the component and wave it under their nose and saying, how come this is messed up? How come what mistake did you make?
Right.
It just doesn't work.
Well, it doesn't work if you expect to have some kind of collaborative relationship or a long and ongoing relationship with your supplier. If this is a commodity, that if it's a one-time transaction, you may not be very invested in the relationship. But if this is expected to be an ongoing relationship with your supplier, if this is somebody you expect to do business with over an extended period of time, then that's just not, it just doesn't make any sense to have an adversarial relationship like that when it comes to quality and reliability issues.
Well, I know if I was a vendor and somebody started yelling at me the first time I ever talked to them, and, you know, they made a transactional bought some components from a distributor. So I wasn't even involved in the transaction other than feeding the supply chain.
Right.
And they call me up and start yelling at me. I'm like, well, who are you?
You know, one of the things that often gets kind of overlooked is, what is the cost to the supplier to do business with you? You know, what is your potential as a customer? What is your long-term revenue and profit potential as a customer to this supplier? If the supplier believes that there is a benefit in working with you, you know, if they feel that there's future revenue or future profit that they can that they can gain as a result of working with you, then they're obviously going to be a lot more motivated. You know, when Fred, when you and I were working at HP, suppliers wanted to work with HP, right? I mean, we were a big company that represented a lot of revenue and a lot of potential profit. So that name alone was enough of an incentive. I'm sure that there were people that returned your phone call, Fred, that because you were working for HP, right?
Certainly.
A lot more eager to work with you to solve these problems because they understood that if they successfully addressed this issue, they were more likely to get future business.
Even smaller companies, though, they didn't have the HP behind their name, yet they generally, we also at HP had the purchasing power to really cut margins. So, they made net a total more money, but for each unit shipped, they didn't make very much.
Right.
Where a small company represents more profit per year.
It's possible. It's possible that they could. But again, to bring this back to failure analysis or helping to address reliability issues, what you're looking for from your supplier is participation. You know, you want them to participate in the FA process. Mm-hmm. And if they see you as a customer that they're not going to make a lot of money on, if you're just not attractive as a customer, you're not profitable, then they're not going to put a lot of time and energy into helping you out. You know, you were talking before in an earlier recording that we did, Fred, about mm-hmm. a supplier who just reported that a component was damaged, you know, and that was the end of it. They took some pictures. They, they spent, obviously it was a very superficial analysis. They weren't invested. What was in it for them? Why should they invest a lot of time to understand what the root cause was?
That's right. Yeah. And that goes when we did talk about the collaboration and build that relationship. And that's been a theme through a lot of our discussions is if this is an important supplier and one that we need basically on our team, that starts early. So when you get to the point when something goes wrong, whether it's a prototype or it's in the field and you're trying to resolve this to find out what can we, the big we, the supply chain, your manufacturing, your design, do to solve this. Now, this brings up, and the reason I titled this one, The Common Responses to Failures.
Yes.
the very first time I ran into, shipping something back to the supplier, we called them up and said, hey, we're having this problem. What's going on? Why are we having this issue? And it was a crystal, a small electronic component, and the crystal was failing. And we found out later, to make a long story short, we found that the crystal attachment, the little bead of adhesive, the silver epoxy adhesive that attaches the crystal element, the little piece of glass, basically, to a tray, was incomplete, and it created a stress riser that would enhance its ability to crack.
Got it.
Kind of thing. So we didn't know that at the time. We had isolated this to that we're having bad crystals, and it looked like it was like 10% of the crystals we were doing.
Wow.
We're putting on the boards were failing. This is a prototype. So we called the vendor, and they said, well, we've shipped billions of crystals. I mean, this is the first time we've ever heard of this, and it can't be our problem. And, our product is good when it leaves here. And they talked about their outgoing inspection and all the quality systems and everything else. They basically said, it's not our fault, man.
Yeah. 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 Very, very common response. Yeah. Obviously what you want to hear is let's work on this together. Let's figure this out together.
Right. And either side of that conversation can flip it to let's solve this together. Let's both learn something. So another one I get was, you dropped it, right?
So it was your fault.
Your fault.
What we shipped you was perfect. You destroyed it.
That's right. Yeah. It left here good. You described it. This is it's being put into a handheld device, and if it's dropped. They're not designed for that. You shouldn't do that.
Right.
And we said, wait a second, nowhere on the data sheet do you talk about shock and vibration and all that other stuff.
Right.
And there's no reason it shouldn't work here. And so this is a true story, is that then they came back and said, well, we tested it. And they showed me a video. They put it up on YouTube, actually, to show us. Is they had a guy in the lab standing over a piece of carpet, a little square of carpet, and he had a crystal. It's small. It's like smaller than the last index of your pinky finger, right? It's your fingernail. It's a small, small component. And he took that component at about chest high and dropped it under the carpet. And then he put it in a tester, and a green light came on. And he looked at the camera and says, it survives drop.
Wow, very scientific. Yeah. Very good.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not on a circuit board. It's not, you know, with the mass that's around it. It doesn't have the velocity. This thing basically floated to the ground.
Right.
Okay.
That's hysterical.
Not our fault, man. It survives drops from that height.
Yeah.
So, that didn't help. So another guy said, we're sorry you've had the problem. It's a one-time thing.
Right.
You know, it'll never happen again. Trust me.
Trust me. With no corrective action.
No corrective action. Nothing. Right. No admit. You know, no understanding of what the failure mechanism is.
Right.
You know, and that might work with a handful of people who say, all right, great.
Oh, it will.
They accept blame. We're off. We're good. It's not going to happen.
It'll absolutely work because, again, I don't know. We want to think the best. And we want to believe that the supplier understands their own process. Right. So you want to be able to say, well, if the supplier says it was a one off, I get it. Things happen. We live in a chaotic, you know, universe. There's variability that's inherent in everything that we do. So, I get that there is a non-zero probability that something bad could happen at some point. But you need more evidence than that. You need more than just trust me, it's not going to happen again.
It reminds me of we had a couple of batches of electrolytic capacitors.
Mm-hmm.
I swear I could almost make a living on just capacitors. It's just they're used everywhere and everything.
Sure.
And so anyway, these electrolytic capacitors, and we noticed that a couple of about a month worth of units, we isolated it very quickly to a handful of batches of shipments, and. So we call the vendor and they say, one, it's not our fault. Two, you did something wrong. Three, it's isolated. Don't worry about it. Uh-huh. Well, none of those were all that satisfactory. So we had one of the HP engineers that was close, one of the procurement folks that was working with these suppliers and was local, said, would you go tell us what this process is?
Yeah.
You know, how do they make these things?
Yeah.
And they just came back to us saying, well, at one point, they mix the slurry that makes the electrolytic solution. And it's just a big vat. It's like a big cook pot kind of thing, big vat. And there's all these chemicals slurrying around. And when I was watching it, the operator had like a measuring cup and a bag of white stuff, this white powder next to them.
Right.
And every now and then, they would take a scoop of this and mix it into the batch.
Right.
And so they asked, what is that? What's going on? And it says, well, that's the component that scavenges oxygen, which is a byproduct of the capacitor actually working. It'll create, or not not oxygen, hydrogen.
Okay.
And it binds that gas back into a molecular form, into a more.
Okay.
So it doesn't create too much internal pressure in vent.
Okay.
And they said that it wasn't measured very much, and it wasn't like he was watching readings or anything to know when to add more of some.
Just whenever he thought it was a good idea, he just dumped some in.
Right. So they asked, how do you know how much to put in here? You know, and most of the rest of the process, everything else in this process was monitored, had beautiful SPC, statistical process control, and everything else, except for this step. And the problem was that the capacitors were venting. We're getting too much hydrogen buildup.
There you go.
And so he said, well, the operator I talked to is the guy that's been doing it for 20 years, and he looks at the color of the mix. And when it gets a little bit too dark, he adds more material. And that's how he had learned how to do it.
Wow.
And it worked. He had the recipe. And so then they got back to and the engineer that was visiting the plant said, well, were you here this month of production? And he goes, no, I was at my daughter's wedding and we did a vacation and stuff like that. And yeah, it was just, yeah, it might have been a one-time thing, but it was the process
it's as simple as that.
Wasn't yeah, very well controlled.
It's as simple as that.
Right. But it took going there to see it to get it, to find out what to deal with.
Wow. Wow. Right. Yeah. Unfortunately, that's not an uncommon story. Well, let me ask you this, Fred. Is one of your common responses, I don't know if you've ever heard this one before, but we built it exactly the way you designed it. If it's not working, it's because of your design.
Oh, yeah. Just it's put the mirror up. It's not my fault. It's your fault, and we're going to blame you.
If it's not working, it's because you gave us a bad design or bad specs in the first place.
You know, it might be phrased as, you know, we create a component. It has a data sheet. It's used in cell phones to spaceships.
Right.
It's really up to you to use it correctly.
Yeah.
We can't control that.
Yeah. You know? And there is some legitimacy there. I mean, we as customers need to educate our suppliers. We need to help our suppliers understand what the use model or what the final field conditions are going to be. You know, that when we choose an off-the-shelf component or component out of a catalog that is used in a variety of different environments, we've got some responsibility here to make sure that the environment that we're exposing it to is going to be within the operating range.
That's right. And so it goes back to that collaboration and, you know, working with partners and so on.
Right.
So, yeah, I think I've lost count here. I think I got one more to go if I want to do the five common responses.
Right, right.
But it was one of them. I don't know how common this is, but so we had a power module from a supplier, and we were getting some failures. So we called the supplier, and I'd already FedExed it to him, right? We had sent some to a lab, and we sent some back to the supplier. And I sent one that was working, one that wasn't working. And I called him to let him know it was on its way. And he goes, oh, no, but... It's ESD.
Of course. You can blame everything on ESD, right?
Oh, yeah. And you don't even have the part yet.
You might as well be blaming, you know, gremlins or something.
Right? Or lightning strike somewhere on the planet. And so I didn't really hope to get a lot of good info from them out of that. So I went back to our internal lab and I talked to Ralph, the lab guy. I miss him. Yeah, I really do.
Those people are, you know, their experience and their skill, their talent, they cannot be replaced.
Oh, no. And I asked him, so have you seen ESD damage to parts? Because if you don't do due diligence and you handle circuit boards wrongly, you know you're going to get some damage there. And he goes, yes. It's basically you rule out everything else, and then you go looking for that, and it's really you're looking for a microscopic pinhole in the silicon.
Wow!
And you got to be really, really lucky that where the failure is gives you a clue as to where in the circuit to look at, and you have to have the ASIC circuitry to know where to look.
Right.
And just scanning and looking for it is near impossible to find them. And he showed me some pictures of them, but he said it's vast majority of the time we rule everything else out and then we say it's probably ESD and then we look for it, but we usually run out of time and we just conclude that it's either we don't know or it might be ESD.
Well, Fred, I think it's worth asking, why are we getting these answers in the first place? I mean, these are the five most common answers that we get. Why are we getting these answers? And what can we do to get better answers?
Well, that's probably a topic for a whole nother episode. I'm looking at the clock. But these are things that if you see these symptoms, it's probably related to that not having a good relationship to start with. Or maybe you're talking to the wrong person
at
the organization. But let's come back and talk about how do you set this up so that you can avoid these answers right from the start.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think we've got our next episode lined up already.
Okay.
We're moving ahead here. So if you're listening and this is something you're looking forward to, stay tuned. We'll come back to this topic. Alternatively, if there's something you would like to learn about or like to hear about and something that's on your mind, maybe a recent relationship with your supplier that you'd like some advice on or like to talk with us about, you know, grab your cup of coffee and have a seat at the table with us and do that by letting us know. Give us a comment or feedback. You can do that at reliability.fm. It's the Reliability Engineering Podcast Network is what I'm calling it now. But it'll give us the information so that we can help you solve problems and make improvements in your program. So thanks, Tim. Appreciate the conversation. I think we could have related a dozen more stories about supplier comments.
It was my pleasure, Fred.
All right. Till next time, have fun.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.